This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on the show, we'll uncover some of Cincinnati's hidden history. But first, with hosting parties, visiting family, and preparing holiday meals, December can be a busy month, so probably the last thing you want to think about this time of year is your finances. But with the December 31st deadline looming for certain financial activities, tax and financial experts say the time you spend now will reap benefits in the new year and beyond. Joining us this afternoon with year-end financial advice, our certified public accountant Agnes Spelker, a senior tax manager with Barnes Denig, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Agnes and Chris, good to see both of you this afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It is always a pleasure to be here, Mark.
Always good to see your smiling face, Chris. And before we get started talking about year-end financial planning, you have some notable numbers today to talk about.
We do. We do. Of course, last Friday, we got the employment figures, which were about as expected, in the range of 180,000 new jobs. The unemployment rate fell to 4.6%. It has just been steadily down over the last 7.5 years or so. This week, we got a look at the Institute for Supply Management's non-manufacturing index, the so-called service sector. That number was expected. Anything above 50 means expanding. This number came in at 57.2. So this is an economy that's just kind of starting to feel its oats a little bit.
That's quite a bit over that.
Yeah, it's been described as more of a plow horse than a racehorse, but I think it's starting to have dreams of the Derby and Keeneland opening up. This is an economy that's starting to chug along a little bit.
And didn't gross domestic product come in?
GDP came in
over 3%.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. So this is not what recessions look like. We also got this morning, we had at least four separate numbers released. The trade deficit was expected to come in about $42 billion. It was a little wider than that. It was $36.4 billion the prior month. It was over $42.6 billion last month. We got to look at non-farm productivity, which was up 3.7%. So the American workforce is getting a little more productive. And that's why the unit labor costs were still up too, though. So the actual cost of making stuff, so there's still inflation in the system, up 0.7%. Factory orders, this was a big thing. Factory orders were up 2.7%. So this is big stuff rolling out of factories. If you strip out the volatile airline orders, it was still up 0.7% for the month. So this is an economy, again, that seems to be doing well. This is why you're seeing interest rates rise. The yield on the 10-year treasury, the benchmark treasury, is around 2.4%. To put that in perspective, right around Brexit time, it was 1.5%. It was about 1.8 going into the election not quite a month ago. So interest rates have risen. Stocks have done well as we speak, right? This morning, the Dow is up about this afternoon, part of the Dow is up about 18 points. The S&P 500 is up also on a percentage basis, about 0.2%. So again, it's you hate to say all is well as with the world, but the certain sectors of the market have done better than others. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal last week that said, if the Dow's at a record, why aren't I making money? Well, it's because if you were doing everything right and you have a diversified portfolio and you own bonds, bonds have had a rough time lately. And not every sector of the stock market has felt this rally similarly. Banks have been on fire. Energy stocks have just been roaring right ahead. Certain industrials have done well. But the consumer staples, Procter & Gamble, as an example, has gone from 90. It hit 81 and change. I think it's around 83 today. That whole sector has been a source of funds. People have been taking profits in those conservative big companies and putting it to work where the animal spirits are a little stronger.
And when you talk about bonds, Chris, people have to keep in mind, too, that when the interest rate, that yield figure goes up, the price on bonds is going down. So that's why they've been struggling.
That's correct. And it's important to understand, especially since many people own bonds through the mechanism of a bond mutual fund, to understand what the maturity, the average maturity of the fund is. In other words, is Does it own a lot of 10-year bonds or 15-year bonds, or does it own shorter-term bonds? The shorter the maturity and the lower the duration, the sensitivity to interest rates, the better those things are going to hold up in a rising interest rate environment. And remember that the Fed will be meeting next week. Chances are very good that they'll be raising interest rates.
So I have Agnes Spelker from Barnes Dennis here today. We're going to talk about things you should be doing as the end of the year approaches. So let's start off with this, Chris and Agnes. What is the top thing, the very first thing that people should be looking at in terms of their financial planning this time of year?
This time of year, the general advice that we give is to defer any income and incur any expenses. It's the time value of money. We don't know what next year is going to bring, but we know what the current year is. So we say that let's go ahead, defer any of the income that we can, and increase our expenses. Pay your real estate taxes before the end of the year. Pay your fourth quarter Ohio estimate before the end of the year, or Kentucky, so that you can take it a deduction in the current year.
And also, many people own mutual funds. If you own them inside a tax-qualified account, such as an IRA or 401k, it doesn't make much difference. But if you own shares of a mutual fund that are not held inside a tax-qualified account, if you just hold them in a joint account or in your own individual name, this is a time of year when you are getting notices that your fund may be distributing its, you know, your share of its long-term net gains, if any. And some of these could be as much as, I just saw a list this morning from some fund families, as much as 5 to 7% of the actual fund's value the fund may have turned over and is ready to distribute to you as a capital gain. And just because you might reinvest those capital gains into more shares doesn't mean that the IRS isn't looking for their share of taxes on those gains. So it's a good thing to, if you own a mutual fund that's not in an IRA, call your financial advisor or call the fund company or go to the company's website. And they're starting to post to these things right now. So at least you won't be surprised when you go to do your taxes. And you have about a little more than 3 weeks to try to find a loss you could use to offset that gain if you want to go into the new tax year neutral.
So that's where the term tax loss harvesting comes in, right, Chris? Tax loss harvesting, is that something you can do throughout the year, or is it something you have to wait till the end of the year to do it?
Well, yeah, you can actually do that any time during the year. What we do at the end of the year, Barnes Denning takes a good look at each of the clients and says, where are you currently? Are we in a good tax situation? Are our capital gains quite high? Is there any way we can lower those tax gains? And that would be by harvesting some of the losses that we have.
Yeah, it's a good idea to call your financial advisor or to go to the website wherever your assets are being held. Again, this only affects your after-tax monies.
Right. If it's in an IRA, if it's in a 401k plan, something like that, and then
not meaningful.
It doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. Okay. But outside IRA accounts, it's a big, big deal. And so call or go online to find out what your realized gains or lack thereof have been so far this year. Because there are two columns. There are gains that you've already booked. If you've sold things for more than you paid for them, then those are gains. They're so-called realized gains. And then you have unrealized gains, and maybe you have some. You might have a net unrealized gain in a portfolio of $10,000, but there might be something in that account that is down in value. And you can actually pinpoint that and say, I want to sell that and use that loss to offset the gains.
How much are gains taxed at, Agnes?
Gains are taxed at 15% unless you're in the highest tax bracket. It's taxed at 20. And then there's other things like investment tax that actually increases it above the 20%.
Now, these are for gains assets that have been held more than a year.
Assets held more than a year, correct. Long-term capital gains.
And how much of a loss can you claim? How does that work?
The loss can be used to offset any capital gains, but can only be used to offset $3,000 of ordinary gains. So if you have losses in excess of your capital gains, you can use $3,000 of that to offset your other income. The rest of it gets carried over until you use it.
So let's say, Agnes, if you had if you booked $10,000 of gains but $16,000 of losses, then you would offset all the gains. you would be able to use 3,000 of the 6,000 excess to offset your ordinary income. And then that 3,000 would carry forward next year against other gains, or if you had no other gains, you could use that to offset additional income until it's all used up.
That is correct. The other thing we need to consider is wash sales. Because if you sell something and you buy it and within 30 days, it's considered a wash sale, and that sale
Sometimes
is not a
sell
loss.
It and then buy it, try to buy it back.
Try to buy it
do,
back.
You do buy it back. It's a wash sale. The IRS is not going to let you get away with that, are they?
That's right.
Well, and it's not as easy as it sounds, too, because it used to be that they only looked for afterwards, but now it's a 30 or 31-day window on both sides. So if you sell something for a loss, you have to not have bought it somewhere else. Even an, even if you buy it in an IRA account,
that
could
correct.
Disqualify the loss and make it a wash sale. And you have until – you have to stay out of it for 30 days. And this is why mutual fund companies have had difficulty getting 1099s out as early as they used to, because the mutual funds themselves won't know if something they did on the last day of the year is long or short term until January 31st, because they have to stay out of it 31 days. And so 1099s, ever since that came into effect, and I think it was with the 2003 Bush-era tax law change, that 1099s have been coming in February and March since then.
That is correct.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. You can also email us, talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We got an email from Bob who says, I just got a notice that a stock I held was sold. There was a company buyout. Now I have a profit. He says, I wasn't expecting that this year. And he says that he thinks that's something that's called an unsolicited trade. He's wondering if there's anything he can do at this point, if he has to pay the tax on that.
He's going to have to pay the tax on it, but that's where maybe you could go and harvest some of the losses. If he's got losses out there, that he could offset this gain by some losses.
Sorry, if he held those shares in an IRA or 401k, again, it wouldn't make any difference. But if those are held outside, then there is probably a taxable event there. And yeah, it was an unsolicited buyout offer. If it's an all cash deal, sometimes even. Buyouts that are both cash and stock can affect your cost basis. So it's always a good idea to make sure that you have accurate cost basis. This is also the time of year where you have to make sure that if you have an IRA account or some kind of qualified plan and you are beyond the age of 70 and a half, or it's actually 71 depending on whether you – this is when you have to start paying very close attention to it. The penalties for under-distributing – and not complying with the IRS's required minimum distributions rule are five times as onerous as the penalty for taking money out before you're 59 and a half. It's no fun. It's a 50% – Agnes, step in, but it's a 50% penalty, isn't it?
How big of a tax whack is this, Agnes?
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. You need to make sure that you are taking every step to make sure that you're taking out the required minimum distribution. And what that is, it's a calculation on the balance that you have in your account, how long they expect you to live, and the amount of money that you need to take out. Now, that's just the minimum amount. You need to take that amount out. You can take more out.
And you've got to do that by December 31st.
But it has to be done by December 31st, correct.
Right. And if that minimum, for example, is $1,000 and you only take out $500 because you just kind of got distracted by watching the Bengals, for example, then that penalty is
about $250.
Yeah, it's half of what you underwithheld. It's a big deal.
Now, what about people who inherited an IRA or 401k? Do they also have to be concerned about that minimum required distribution?
They do. An inherited IRA has to be considered for the minimum distribution.
Unless it's spousal.
Unless it's spousal, correct. A spouse doesn't have to take the money out, but the kids do.
Right, and they have to. There's a separate calculation based on the age of the person who passed away. And the age of the person.
And the age of the person that inherits
the money. Yes.
But again, this is something you should be checking on. If you haven't done it by now, you got to get it done by
December 31st. That's correct.
The magic date.
And I believe, Agnes, that's why I'm so happy to have a certified public accountant here. Is it or is it not true that if someone passes away in, for example, in 2016, that a non-spousal beneficiary, a brother, sister, child, whatever, or whoever, pardon me, doesn't have to make a withdrawal in that year. It's the year following the year
someone
passes away.
Well, what it is that a distribution has to be made in that year. So if the distribution was already made, then it doesn't
By the person who passed
made.
Away.
By the person that passed
That's
away.
That's right. Right. Before that IRA usually gets transferred to the beneficiaries, one of the first questions is, did the person who passed away make their required minimum distributions? That's step one.
Right. And in the year of death, it's based on the age of the person that died. It's not based on the individual that inherited the IRA plus the person that died. So the amount's going to be quite a bit higher in that year because the expectation is that it's truly taken out by the person that died.
Yeah. There's a little known fact, too, because a lot of people figure, well, I inherited a Roth IRA, and therefore the Roth is not taxable, so I shouldn't have to be forced to take the money out. But that's not the IRS isn't that generous, are they, Agnes?
They want you to start taking the money out, right. If you own a Roth, if it's your Roth, you don't have to take distributions.
For now, they're not subject to the required minimum.
Right now, they're not subject to the required minimum distributions. You don't have to take anything out. Once it passes on, the IRS says, yeah,
then it's a different matter.
It's still tax-free, but you can't let that money pile up generation after generation.
And we'll continue our conversation about year-end financial planning. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's December 6th, only 25 days until the end of 2016. Hard to believe the year's almost over, Chris. Just hard to believe.
It's but, you know, pictures and catchers report in about 70 days.
That's hard to believe, too.
Howard Wilkinson, whose birthday it is today, would be the ultimate authority on that.
But with the December 31st fast approaching us, there are all kinds of things people need to consider about their finances. So joining us today with some advice, certified public accountant Agnes Spelker, who is a senior tax manager with Barnes Dennig, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Before we hit the break there, Agnes, we were talking about minimum required distributions. What is a qualified charitable distribution? How's that play into this whole thing?
If you have a required minimum distribution, if you give it directly to charity, that means you can't touch it. You have to tell whoever your financial planner is to give it directly to a charity.
From the IRA.
From an IRA, and it has to be required minimum distribution, so you have to be at least 70 and a half. You can give it directly to a charity, and if you do that, you don't have to pick it up in income. You don't get a charitable deduction, but you don't have to pick it up in income, and there are so many benefits to reducing your income.
Once you do that, are you locked into doing that every year that you take
that
distribution?
No, you can do it anytime. In fact, this time last year, we were scrambling because the law had not passed as far as whether the qualified charitable distributions were in effect or not. They didn't come into effect until sometime mid-December. Now it's become permanent. So, and you can do it at any point in time. You can do it in January. You can do it in December. You take the money out. So if you're required to take $30,000 out, if you give that $30,000 to charity, there's no reporting as far as income on your personal tax return.
It's as if it never hit your W-2 or 1099.
That's something you have to do before December 31st of the year that you're going
to
claim it.
Yes.
That's correct.
And also, Agnes, isn't it true that there's a different limit? So if someone is over age 70 and a half, they could give away, if their required minimum distribution is $15,000, for example, they could do more than that.
That is correct.
There's a maximum. It's like
$100,000. They can give up to $100,000 to any charity at any point in time.
Directly
and not be included. And if you do it one year, you don't have to do it the next year. And if you want to do it and if you want to give it, you can go ahead and give it to three or four organizations. You don't necessarily just have to give it to one.
WVXU, for example.
That's correct.
Well, it is the season to be charitable. So any charitable contribution you make right now is going to be deductible for your 2016 taxes, right?
That is correct.
Has to be done before that magic date, though.
Yes.
513-419-7100 to join us. And you can also email talk@wvxu.org. We had a question come in by email. We bought a condo for our son to live in while he's going to grad school. And they're not using it for rental property. And the question is, can we deduct the mortgage interest on that loan? Their current home's already paid off. So they bought a condo. Their son's living in it while he's in grad school. Is that mortgage interest deductible?
That mortgage interest is deductible as a second home. So you can use it as a second home. So you can take the mortgage interest. You can take the real estate taxes as long as you are the owner. If your son is paying those expenses and he is not the owner, then it's not deductible. So it has to be paid by the owner, and it has to be the person that owned it in order to take the deduction.
And I'm glad you're here today to answer that question. Because Chris and I don't know. I would have thought no.
The but, sound of shoulders shrugging.
I would have thought no, but you're saying it is. Deductible right. is a second home. Again, 513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk to Carol in Oxford. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you. Go right ahead.
Okay, my question is, my situation is my company is being sold and my PTO vacation time is going to be dumped into my last paycheck, which will be $1,228 in the amount of $8,000. And I'm kind of struggling as to what to do with that. It can't be deferred until after the first of the year. Any suggestions would be helpful, and I'll just take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Carol. We appreciate the call.
Yes, Carol. There are options that you can put it into the retirement plan. Your PTO when you're leaving a company, and that's the case whenever you're leaving. It's not just when the company closes out, that you can put it into the retirement plan. Now, they're closing up the retirement plan, so there may be other qualifications within the company, but that would be the case.
Would she be able to roll that money to an IRA,
yes,
or does it have to any kind of a qualified
retirement
plan?
She would
have
to put it into a retirement plan and then roll it into an IRA.
Okay.
So if she could put it into the company plan, if the company plan is still active, and roll it into an IRA if they are shutting down the plan.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join us. That brings up another question. It's not too late to make a contribution to your company's retirement plan, is it?
That is correct.
You still got until December 31st.
You have until December 31st to make it into a company plan. You have until April 15th to make a contribution to an IRA.
And in fact, if you are self-employed, a lot of realtor types will do this. Can you not establish a plan? You don't have to fund it, but you can establish a plan by the end of the year, and you have until the time you file your taxes or April 15th in order to fund it. Is that still?
And that's correct. And the reason that is because you don't know how much income you're going to have until you finalize your tax return. And a SEP contribution is based on the amount of income that you have. So they can't say that you have to make the contribution by December 31st when you don't know what the income is going to be. So you can make that SEP contribution up until the time that you file the return.
Let's talk to Elaine in Fort Thomas. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. My question is about Series EE bonds that we bought 30 years ago that now are full maturity, so they no longer earn interest. So we were interested in possibly cashing them in, but didn't know if there's a way to reduce the amount of tax due on the interest that will be given to us at this time.
Okay,
the Series EE bonds, if they're used for education purposes, are not taxable at all. So if you've got a grandchild or somebody that you can help with higher education costs, then they're not taxable. Otherwise, they're going to be taxable.
Okay, so only education costs?
There might be some other examples, but I can't think of any.
They're taxable in the year you actually cash them in. I mean,
that's what she's doing.
Right. They're happy to let you sit there. The bonds, once they get past that final maturity, there's no interest being credited. But just because they've gone past that final maturity, if let's say they do that in this year, you could still wait until next year to cash them in.
That is correct.
And then it becomes a taxable event that year unless, as you said, you use them for education.
And interest is taxed. It's taxed at your regular income rate, isn't it? Not considered a capital gain.
It's not considered a capital gain.
Right. The IRS has a great website. It's Treasury Direct, where you can actually plug in the serial number on your savings bonds, and you can see exactly what kind of gains you're looking at. And you can plug the whole kit and caboodle of them in on one page and see what you're looking at. It's been very useful for a lot of people.
And it's interest, not capital gains. So. Mm-hmm.
It's considered interest.
Correct.
Real quick, how would you do that? I mean, we do have a grandson who is a freshman in college. Does that money have to go directly to the college, or do we take ownership of it and then to the college? And how would that work?
I mean, I think you need to talk to an accountant.
Oh, okay.
They can help you work through all the details, because it's a little more intricate than just, you know.
Yeah, that is a good question, though. That is a good question.
Yeah,
and we can do that.
Try that at that treasurydirect.gov website and poke around on the savings bond page, and the answer might be there.
Okay.
Elaine, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
We had a question from, let's see here, Kathleen. She wants to know if you have any thoughts on how she can find out if her mom had an IRA. She passed away, but she can't find any records. And she's pretty sure that her mother did have an IRA somewhere, though.
Wouldn't you, if her mom happened to be over 70 and a half or had taken distributions, wouldn't you look through her old tax returns to find the trail? Would that not be the best forensic
account? That would be one possibility.
If she were 70 and a half, she would have had to take distributions and she would have received some money. Otherwise, accounts that are inactive go to the Ohio Ohio site that says that takes all the funds that people have left out there and not paid. But if she had an IRA, she should be taking distributions. There should be some kind of documentation, some kind of letter written to her mom saying that she's required to take this money out.
Exactly. And also, there would be the Form 5498 that each IRA custodian is required to send to her. So if you look through her records, also that lost money, every state has its own lost money. So you just Google state plus lost money. They all have their own different ones, but just type in the name and there it is.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join us. Let's talk to Derek in Oakley. Hi, Derek.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go right ahead.
So my mother and father passed away about a year and a half ago in an unexpected accident, and all of us kids received a small distribution, I guess, from their estate of about $50,000. My wife and I, we put it in the bank, and we're just kind of standing there looking at it. I've contacted several financial planners, and it seems like it's not enough money for them to deal with, but I don't want to let it sit in the bank forever, and was wondering if I could get some direction or advice on which way to head.
Well, Derek, sorry about the way you had to come into that money in the first place. That's very sad. There are a lot of there are a lot of mutual fund companies that would be, I would look at some of their websites. I would talk with some friends and ask for people who handle, smaller accounts. Of course, if you're adding this to your own portfolio, $50,000, that's nothing to sneeze at. And so, there should be people, who will help you out. But I would ask friends for advice on who you should call. But I would – there are some very reputable mutual fund companies. I would just go straight to their website and start with that.
Okay. Agnes, as far as taxes go, how important is it to check your tax payments, how much you've paid so far this year? Because I think isn't there an IRS rule that says you have to have, 90% paid by December 31st? So that's something else that people should be taking a look at.
90% of the current year or 110% of the prior year or 100% depending on your income situation or where your adjusted gross income is. It's important. There's penalties associated with it. I've got a lot of clients that just say those penalties aren't worth me worrying about making sure that I have 90% paid in the current year. I'll take the penalties. Right now, with the interest rates being so low, yes, there are penalties, but it's not that big. But you might as well go ahead and get your payments in and have it all set up.
Well, and besides that, when you pay your taxes in April, then you're not going to have quite as much to catch up on, are you?
That is correct.
Yeah. What about folks who have flexible spending accounts? What should they be thinking about? What do they need to know coming up to December 31st?
Well, if you have a cafeteria plan, the cafeteria plan has to be used before the end of the year. Now, there are some exceptions, and you need to talk to your company and find out what those exceptions are, because they've been put in place, but they've only been there for a year, and it's only companies that have actually adopted those plans that will allow you to carry some of that amount over. If your plan does not allow you to carry it over, then you need to make sure that you use those expenses before the end of the year. Use those amounts before the end of the year. Otherwise, you lose them.
Yeah. Right. Rather than running out and trying to get sick intentionally.
Eyeglasses.
This is why the eyeglass industry
having major surgery during the holidays, which nobody really wants to do.
You've got to make sure your surgeon has your complete attention.
Yeah. Eyeglasses, dentists.
Busy time for the optician. Yeah.
And it used to be that you could buy Band-Aids and those types of things. You can't do those things anymore out of your flexible spending account. Now, if it's a true flexible spending account, those accounts can grow and you don't have to use them. It's actually just the cafeteria plan that has to be used by December 31st.
So that's the difference between the two things. If it's cafeteria plan, then it has to be used. If it's a true flexible spending account, you're okay, but you need to find it out from whoever you're putting that money with, the plan sponsor. Yeah. You don't have the same concern, though, about using it or losing it with HSAs, do you? I mean, those roll over year after year after year. So is it a good idea to think about funding your HSA more?
Always recommend funding the HSA. And there's a couple rules of thought. Some people say, I'm just going to leave that in there, and I'm just going to gather my expenses. And you can gather them for a while. And actually, 10 years down the road, you can put all your expenses together and take that money out at that point in time rather than taking it out to begin with to let the money grow. Chances are you could lose your receipts. You know, those things make it more difficult if you try to do it over a time period. But you do have time that you can take the money out of the flexible spending account without having to pay a penalty with actually having the expenses.
So I guess, Chris, big piece of advice, think ahead for next year.
Be looking at next year. Be looking at your statements now. Go online, see what you have in the way of realized gains and unrealized gains, and try to pair them off if at all possible. And if you have a qualified retirement plan and you are age 70 and a half, under certain circumstances, you don't have to make the required minimum. But if you should always check, because the penalty, again, for under distributing is a big one.
Yeah. Thank you both, Agnes, Chris, for joining us this afternoon.
You're very welcome.
Certified Public Accountant Agnes Spelker, who is a senior tax manager with Barnes Denig, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. As a reminder, the information provided on the show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation. Coming up, we'll learn about the hidden history of Cincinnati with author Jeff Seuss.